If you've been a victim of cybercrime, local and national authorities are ready to assist you. Full stop. Those are the words across the Department of Homeland Security's Be Cyber Smart site for reporting incidents. We're discussing cyber breaches and what businesses have learned on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Congress is moving on legislation that would force companies that operate critical infrastructure to tell federal authorities when they are hacked. What do you think of this level of transparency? Who should know when your systems go dark? It's 800-642-1234. Brian Dennis is director of the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater. Brian, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. So, thank you so much for having me again.
Well, we're going to first focus on the governor's cybersecurity summit. And one of the things that surfaced at the recent summit was to prepare for a black swan attack. And I'm wondering, what is a black swan cyber attack?
So, you know, there are so many different attacks out there that we're seeing just every day that are popping up. The black swan, it's another form of ransomware. It's one of these attacks that we're seeing that's happening just across the board. You know, last year, 2020, was really kind of a pivotal year for everybody, not just because of COVID, but because of what we saw happening with these attacks that are coming through. We saw ransomware attacks grow by over 400, actually, it was about 535%. And so these attacks are coming into our businesses every day, and it's unbelievable what we're actually seeing happening in this realm right now. There's so much growth on the criminal side that it's really becoming so much harder for us to detect every day.
Yeah, and ransomware attacks have gotten way more expensive as these thieves demand, you know, higher and higher payments. Look at Colonial Pipeline paid millions of dollars. JBS, the meatpacker, they did as well. Should companies pay these ransoms? Is that the right move? Because the FBI has tried to discourage companies from paying.
That's a really good question right now. I was actually having a conversation yesterday with a colleague where we were looking at this legislation that's coming out. There's legislation from the Senate for both companies that they're asking them to tell the U.S. government if they've paid a ransom, and they want to know that information within 24 hours of that ransom being paid. Additionally, if a breach occurs, the Senate, there's another Senate bill sitting out there where they want to know within 72 hours if a breach occurred and how are you dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand the thought process on that. There are a lot of unknowns in cybersecurity right now. You know, we know that ransoms are being paid every day, and it's not really always making the news. A lot of these companies don't necessarily want that information out there, that they've had to pay millions of dollars in ransoms to really continue their business. And so it is a hard, you know, we're trying to create a balancing act right now to understand cybersecurity. But our approach is that this is a crime. At the end of the day, this is an attack, and we really should deal with it like that. So, you know, we're going to have to build a level of transparency at some point to better understand where we are when it comes to cyber attacks and really just how bad is it.
How do you feel then about Congress pushing legislation that would force some companies, you know, critical infrastructure type companies, to report these cyber attacks pretty quickly, 72 hours?
You know, I believe that there is a need to better understand what's going on in that realm. But there are 16, you know, key elements within the critical infrastructure system. And there's a lot of companies that are private companies, and they have to answer to their stockholders. And so they're trying to figure out what will that look like. And so I feel like, you know, when the Senate and the House really begin writing these bills, having conversations to understand what is best for everyone at the same time. Critical infrastructure is a component that we have got to secure, and we're not doing a good enough job of getting there. And so we need to start figuring out what can we do to get everyone on board and making sure that, you know, the key elements of infrastructure are ready to go along with us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Brian Dennis, who directs the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater, and we're discussing these cyber attacks, the future of cyber defense and in business and industry, and where the federal government comes in. You can join in. What kind of training have you received at work to help recognize cybersecurity threats? What questions do you have about cyber defense? Join in at 800-642-1234. So, Brian, you know, this federal legislation, it comes after two, you know, just major incidents involving private companies that really left the federal government scrambling a bit to figure out what was going on. And, you know, one of those was the SolarWinds attack, which was, you know, suspected Russian spies. And I'm wondering, you know, that the hackers broke into the code production, I understand, of SolarWinds, which makes the software for managing networks, and then eventually got its way into these federal agency emails and in even counterintelligence. What, in generally speaking here, what do hackers want?
So it's really one of these commonly misunderstood ideas within the cyber attack world. You know, what we hear a lot of is nation states. And so we hear about Russia and Iran and North Korea and these nation states that are really great at hacking. But at the end of the day, what they're really focused on is this is about money. You know, this is about criminals and criminal enterprises across the globe making boatloads of money off of these attacks. And so while, yes, the nation states that are out there, they're actively hacking, and you know, Russia is a great example, North Korea, Iran, they are definitely trying to get into our critical infrastructure and defense systems. But at the same time, they are supporting what are really, at the end of the day, they're gangs of cyber criminals whose main purpose is to really go out there and make money and make lots of money at the same time.
So circling back then to Wisconsin and what we should look at, what are the primary top line cybersecurity threats facing our state, our residents, our companies here?
You know, one of the big issues that we really have to get better about is just basic cybersecurity hygiene. We will all be safer if we all start thinking more about our everyday cyber activities. And you know, it's really interesting. You mentioned training earlier. You know, there are a lot of companies out there that require 30 minutes to an hour every year where somebody sits at a computer and they might watch a video on why not to click on a link or, you know, how to identify a phishing attack. And what does that really do for our training efforts? Do people walk away with an understanding of, okay, this is top of mind. I will take this with me throughout the rest of the year. To be honest, not many folks do. And so we've got to start thinking about what can we do every day to really integrate the concepts of cybersecurity hygiene and really begin pushing that as an idea across every single business level. And so for the person working the front line all the way to the CEO, what can we do to make sure that people are thinking more securely, that they're changing their passwords when necessary, that they're paying attention to potential phishing attacks, that they can recognize a phishing attack when it comes in.
Yeah. And so like, you know, giving your employees that annual video and that quiz afterward and passing it, you know, you're saying what I'm hearing is there's way more to it than just that for having good cyber hygiene.
Absolutely. You know, we need to start thinking about passwords and actually changing passwords more often than once a year. We need to start really getting our people to understand what a phishing attack looks like, what a ransomware attack potentially coming in could look like. 95% of those attacks are happening on email. And it's really us. We are the ones that are allowing it to come in. And I try to remind people constantly that this at the end of the day is a crime. And you know, we are very apt to point fingers. And so when the Colonial Pipeline attack happened, it almost felt like we were blaming the company. And yes, the company was attacked and their security left them vulnerable. But at the same time, this was a criminal enterprise that was going after a company. And we have to remember that so we can stand behind these organizations when these attacks happen and say, what can we do to be better and learn from every event?
We have UW-Whitewater cybersecurity expert Brian Dennis with us on cyber defense, how businesses can work to shore up their digital security from hackers, what employees can do. Do you work in the industry? What are the major challenges you face? Are you a cybersecurity student? Why did you pursue this career path? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Brian Dennis here on the Ideas Network. Some federal lawmakers want the likes of banks and oil and gas companies and tech providers, utilities, to tell the nation's top cybersecurity agency when they are hit by a cyber attack. We're looking at policy around cybersecurity disclosure, how to protect your devices from being hacked. Here on The Morning Show, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So what is your company doing to safeguard your networks and sensitive data? Do managers treat data protection with urgency, or is it not discussed in meetings? Join in 800-642-1234. Brian Dennis with us, cybersecurity industry expert at UW-Whitewater. Let's bring in Mike now in Rusk County. Hi, Mike. What are you thinking?
Hey, I'm just challenging... maybe not challenge is the right word. I really want to know, are people looking at the costs associated with cybersecurity in the context of the whole, I won't say the whole reason, but majority of the reason that we get into this crazy Russian hacking and so forth is because we have opened our networks up to external operators. When in the old days, when the old mainframe computers, you had to be on site to access your manufacturing network or your HR network or anything like that. You had to be on a physical site. You had to be in the data center at a console. But now this drive to offshore operations to Bangalore or wherever necessitates opening up to the worldwide network to allow the traffic to get there. Is anybody really tracking the cost? If you see, you know what, it was a good idea, but maybe we should just go back, at least for our critical manufacturing operations, to old school. We have a data center. And
Mike, that's really interesting. Yeah, Brian, what do you make of that?
So there is definitely a very valid point there, you know, and I think the problem for us is that we really opened Pandora's box when it comes to our critical manufacturing components. And so one of the areas that we work in here is we actually work with the Department of Defense on a program to help our Department of Defense industrial base and that manufacturing component better secure themselves, because we've got a lot of work that's happening within the DOD. And even here in Wisconsin, we've got some amazing Department of Defense contractors that are building just these really massive projects for the department. And the trick is that their supply chain that they work with sometimes could be 2,000 to 3,000 companies that they're working with, not just within the US, but across the globe. And so that means that there are manufacturing components and designs and elements of designs that are going out all over the place. And so, well, yeah, I definitely understand that it was easier back in the days when we could really just hold all of that information in tighter. The supply chain to create and manufacture all of these goods and services has really just exploded, and it's just massive.
Yeah.
And so we've got to get to a point where we can help that chain really better secure itself.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is, like, due to the network nature of so many of our operations today, let alone our global marketplace, it's like there are vulnerabilities everywhere in order to do business.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have had conversations really all over the country with folks who are looking at this as an issue. I've had opportunities to talk to people in other states, in Colorado and Illinois, Michigan, all over, to really better understand what they're working with. And, you know, when we've had the opportunity to visit with some folks in DC, everyone sees the nature of this beast and that they understand just how bad it is, but just trying to figure out what to do to make it better, is that's the area that we're really working in.
Yeah, and, you know, swinging back to the governor's cybersecurity summit, another theme that came out was to build relationships. And I think that's what you're almost referring to there, is really building that network of relationships. How might that impact your security?
Absolutely. And so we had a really great week with the Wisconsin Governor's Cybersecurity Summit. This was actually the 8th annual summit this year. And what we do is really bring together government entities and folks who are working in the cybersecurity world to talk about the ongoing problems and to really network and to get to know one another. We have an issue right now in cybersecurity, and that is a huge lack of people. We need talent. And so what we're trying to do is to really encourage people across the area to start thinking about getting into a career in cyber. In Wisconsin right now, there's about, just on the tip of the iceberg, we've got about 5,000 open jobs in cybersecurity. We know that number is probably triple, maybe even five times that number when we start thinking about the ancillary jobs that go along with cybersecurity. And so when we get together, that's what we're really focused on, is what can we do to encourage people to begin thinking about cybersecurity as careers? And for folks who are maybe midway through their career and potentially thinking about a change, what can they do to easily access training to get them up to speed to begin their pathway into cyber?
I would imagine, too, that the training is always changing because hackers have also used new tools and techniques in their operations, as you saw this year. So does that training have to continually be updated?
Yes, it does. And so cybersecurity is one of those fields that if you decide to get into it, you really have to dedicate yourself to a lifetime of learning. We here at the university, we've just recently created a bachelor's program and a master's program. And those programs are going to constantly have to evolve their curriculum to keep up with the attacks that are happening today and tomorrow. You know, we're really looking at what can we do to build this front line of workers. Here at the Cybersecurity Center for Business, we really like to use the term create a feeder to the feeder. What can we do to get frontline workers in cybersecurity, get them prepared for that first job, and then also help them think about what do I need to do to constantly keep on top of my game?
We're talking with Brian Dennis, director of the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater. We're looking at the cyber defense industry, the growth of the jobs, how businesses can protect themselves from digital attacks, and your questions about cyber defense at 800-642-1234. Perhaps you're in school for cybersecurity or considering it as a field. Maybe you have looked at random password generators and have a question about them. Join in, 800-642-1234. Brian, you know, how would you suggest a company does like a SWOT analysis or make its priorities? Like, what types of data and services are okay to lose for a couple hours? What losses would lead to a meltdown or possibly even put my company out of business?
You know, that's a really good question. And my response to that is none. There is no data that's worth losing. That is the trick right there, is what can we do to make sure that these attacks don't come in? And when an attack comes in, how quickly can you respond and recover from that attack? One of the things that we do here at the Cybersecurity Center for Business is we have a cyber defense range. And a range is kind of, think of it like an infectious disease laboratory where you might be working with some of the nastiest bugs out there. We do the same thing here with ransomware attacks, with malware attacks. We take businesses and put them into a scenario where they actually have to respond to one of these attacks and help them understand when one happens. It's not really about if anymore. It really is now when an attack happens, how quickly can I stop it in its tracks and make sure that a data breach does not occur? And so that's what we're really helping organizations think about for their future, is if I'm going to really commit to being cyber secure, what does that mean for training? What does that mean for my team? So many of our businesses out there are small businesses that, if they're lucky, they have an IT person working within their organization. But that IT person might be so swamped with just dealing with the day-to-day issues that come up with network technology that they don't necessarily have time to think about cybersecurity. And our argument is that we've got to get past that point. We need to get our organizations up and running and thinking more securely as we move forward.
And it sounds like, as well, practice comes into play here, that when you do this type of penetration testing, if you will, and what response you will have to a threat that comes in, just having regular practice in it might help you out.
Absolutely. And so, you know, if this is one of those things that you're only doing once a year, when that attack happens, will you remember what you're supposed to do? And so we're really wanting people to think forward and to really understand that this is going to happen. I haven't talked to anyone out there who has not had some sort of cyber attack, whether that be personally, where maybe somebody got into a bank account, or professionally, where they saw that happen, a ransomware attack come into a business. It's happening every day. You know, we know that just about $1.5 trillion last year just vanished into the cyber world. That number is just going to grow.
UW-Whitewater's Brian Dennis explaining the vast reach of cyber defense. He leads the Cybersecurity Center for Business housed at UW-Whitewater. Have you ever been hacked and had to regain access to your accounts? What was the experience like to get the decryption key? What did you learn? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing how to improve our nation's cyber defense and your personal cybersecurity here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the aftermath of the Colonial Pipeline hack that infiltrated servers, caused massive fuel outages, panic buying at the pump in May, the government issued emergency rules over the summer, obtained by the Washington Post, to try to prevent another attack that would cripple a pipeline. Do you think your systems are well protected from digital threats? Do you use a password generator or an app that stores all your passwords? Has your system been compromised by phishing? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Cybersecurity Center for Business Director Brian Dennis of UW-Whitewater with us for the hour. Let's bring in Carl in Hayward with a question. Hi, Carl. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my question, Brian. My question relates to what we've heard over the years. It's like when you get an email, or an even better example might be a Google search when you're looking for a web page, and then we're taught to open up the URL and look in at its security stuff, but how do we know what we're looking at? So that's my question. How do we, do I copy and paste the URL and then open up a new page and send it to see if it's really who they say they are? And then I'll hang up and listen to my answer. And then if you could also address, how is blockchain technology possibly going to be involved in banking and security in the future? Thank you.
All right, Carl. Thank you. Two quite different questions there, starting with the URL, Brian.
Yeah. So, you know, phishing attacks are getting better and better and better. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to where is the information coming from? So just recently, I subscribed to a streaming television service, and I got an email from that streaming television service saying that, you know, your account has been breached. We've had some an unfortunate hacking attack, and we need you to get into your account right now and change your passwords. Please click on this link. Everything in that email looked legitimate. The attackers did a very, very good job at making it look like it came from this company. But it really came down to that URL and just taking a look at it and understanding that, you know, when it says Netflix.com, but Netflix is spelled, it's actually Netflix spelled with an E, you know, we have to really begin thinking about, okay, am I going to click on this? When there's an email that has a very specific call to action, a very wanting you to click on one certain piece of information, that's one of those areas that we really have to start thinking, is this legitimate? The concept of trust but verify is one of those areas that we really push within cybersecurity. But what we're changing to now is really a zero trust. Just when an email comes in, you know, understanding that, can I really believe its authenticity? If it's, especially if it's asking me for a call to action and to do something immediately. And so they're getting very, very good at that. There's a lot of virus protection programs now that are doing a lot of internal email scanning to try to stop that from happening. But it's going to take some time for that to really get better, and it's going to be up to us. And so, yes, definitely checking out that URL before you go to it is probably worth its weight in gold. And then to the second question on blockchain.
Well, I just want to pause right there. And the copywriting and grammar on some of these emails now, I've noticed, has become much better.
Yeah. So, you know, when we had, it was Russian attackers and maybe sub-Saharan Africa attackers, you know, putting these things together, the language was definitely at question. It sometimes sounded like Boris and Natasha sending you an email from Rocky and Bullwinkle days. But they have definitely gotten better, to the point that they're actually hiring technical writers. You know, there are career paths in cybersecurity, just like in cybercrime, just like there are in cybersecurity. And so we're seeing a lot of hacking teams that are bringing in professional writers who are putting these emails in place so that they do look more legitimate and that they have a higher click rate. Absolutely.
Wow. So yeah. So moving on then to the question around blockchain technology, and first explaining what it is.
So blockchain technology has really kind of boomed out of the concepts around cryptocurrency, but it really can be integrated into so many different areas. And it's really about a creating a network of trust. And so that's what blockchain is focused on. And so, yes, I do believe that we're going to see a lot of blockchain making its way into our financial sectors and especially within our critical infrastructure to legitimize a lot of data that's coming through. The trick with blockchain is it's going to have to go through a good amount of work before we can get there, specifically on the training side. It is such a new idea that a lot of our companies don't really know what it is. And just trying to explain it, I would need probably another hour or two on your morning show.
Well, you mentioned cryptocurrency, which is the form of currency that hackers usually want to have their ransom paid in. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And it used to be Bitcoin was the ransomware attacker's crypto of choice. But there are tons of different cryptocurrencies out there on the market right now. Some of them have very high accountability rates, and so you can really understand where that money is going. But there are others out there that were set up specifically with the understanding that this is going to be used for cybercrime, and so you can't really track it. And so when you put money into Monero, which is one of those cryptocurrencies out there, and you might never see where it goes again after that. And so we're really, it's... The crypto market is definitely exploding, and there's opportunities within that market to make a lot of money. At the same time, trying to create a concept of accountability within the crypto world is going to be tough, because it was set up on the idea of, I don't want to be accountable. And so there's a lot of issues at play within that crypto world.
When you talk about accountability, I'm wondering about when these breaches happen and these ransomware attempts happen, how often do these crimes lead to arrests or tracking down who is at, you know, who is to blame?
Not often enough. And so really trying to understand where these attacks are coming from, it's incredible when you look at the global scale of cybercrime. And so definitely, you know, here in Wisconsin, there are cyber criminals living among us. Absolutely. There are cyber criminals living among us who every day are out there getting into systems, potentially sending out ransomware attacks, doing all of this nefarious work. And they're pretty much going undetected and because it's happening so often. You know, when we have a 500% increase in any type of crime, our legal entities are really just kind of lost. You know, the FBI is working very hard to really beef up their cyber crimes units because they understand that this is such a major problem. The trick is getting the people. The talent is just really hard to find. And then when we get to our local authorities, you know, if I've been breached here and if I live in Fort Atkinson, if I was breached in Fort Atkinson, you know, going down to my local police department, you know, how are they going to respond? Have they been trained in understanding this was a crime and what can be done? And this is where we really need to keep pushing. And I always push it that this is a crime. At the end of the day, this is all criminal syndicates We would do the same thing if I was being shaken down by the mob in a business somewhere. And so let's start thinking about it that way. And there's going to be a huge mindset that we have to put forward in treating this as a criminal entity.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Brian Dennis, who directs the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater. As we look at the field of cyber defense, personal cybersecurity, and your questions at 800-642-1234. Brian, we heard from Saul in Stevens Point, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Saul is wondering, if businesses that store data in the cloud, are they more susceptible to cyber attacks? Is storing information in the cloud safe?
That's a really good question. We know cloud systems, specifically Amazon Web Service. You know, Amazon's got a great cloud system. Google's got great cloud. Yeah, and so there's a lot of large cloud companies out there. Is it safe? We would like to say yes. The problem is that cloud is a major target these days. There's a big target painted around all cloud service providers because they are storing so much data. Mm. And so utilizing the cloud in a business structure is a good idea. It does allow you the opportunity to not have to have so much storage on site. At the same time, making sure that your access to it is controlled and that you understand who else is getting into it. Your passwords to get into that site is as complicated as it possibly can be. And then don't just use any cloud service provider. If you decide to use one for your business, do a little background. Try to understand specifically what they're doing to keep their cloud safe. Cloud breaches have happened. We've seen a couple in the last few years, and they will continue to happen because it's the golden goose of data. I mean, if you can get into a cloud system, there's just immense amount of data that can be taken out.
Brian, many, many people have cell phones on them all the time. How much of the hacking and the cybersecurity entry points are coming through cell phones these days?
We're seeing more and more of that. People for some reason are hesitant to really think about cybersecurity as a problem on their phone. And that's something we've got to start thinking more about. There are so many apps that are out there that are tracking every little bit of data that we're picking up, not just the data that we're searching on our phone. Our phones are now giving data to organizations and companies, specifically highlighting where we're walking, what we're doing, what store we're geographically in at any given point. That's a lot of really, really interesting and good data that people want to get their hands on. And so definitely the attacks are coming into phones more and more every day. There was a really interesting app that was developed several years ago by a company out of England, and it was a game. And it was just an app that, it was just one of these phones or games that you get on your phone. But within the terms and agreements on the game, it said by okaying this game on your phone, you're giving us your ever-living soul forever and ever and ever. And what it came down to, they were just trying to prove a point that you are really signing away everything when you download some of these apps. They are taking every piece of information that you got on that device and potentially selling it to the highest bidder.
We have UW-Whitewater's Brian Dennis, cybersecurity expert. Has your business been hacked or networks infiltrated? What did hackers want? Did you tell customers about the data breach? How did you learn of the attack and what did you do? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Brian Dennis here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Brian Dennis. He runs the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater. Ransomware attacks, as we've been talking about, are big business. According to the cybercrime research publication, Cybersecurity Ventures, ransomware attacks are on pace to cost the world upwards of $6 trillion this year. Brian Dennis with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Stacy now in River Falls. Hi, Stacy. What is your question about spam?
I don't have a question. I have more of a comment. Just recently, I received an email from what looked like Amazon, and saying I had a package waiting for me. I haven't ordered anything for Amazon in months. So I immediately called Amazon, and they said, can you forward us the email? So I was able to forward them the email. And I've also had problems with Trend Micro Security, where people would call me and say, you owe, you know, a couple hundred dollars. And I was able to write down the phone number, and I actually called Trend Micro and gave them that number so that they have that on their record. I've done that repeatedly because I seem to get Trend Micro all the time. So I'm just kind of taking precautions for that and just wanted to share that with your viewers. And thank you so much. This has been very enlightening. I've learned a lot. So thank you.
Oh, thank you, Stacy. Brian, what do you make of Stacy's tactics there?
That's fantastic. So, you know, the Trend Micro piece, it's really upsetting. What those types of attackers are doing is they've most likely stolen some information that lets them know that you have this type of service. And then they're just doing a little bit of social engineering and getting a phone number for you. And these types of attacks are honestly what's really hitting our older populations right now. Every day, I talk to somebody who has talked to a grandparent or a parent, and they've paid $1,500 to $2,000 over the phone to a security company because they got a phone call saying that their security was out of date. And if they didn't pay right now, that security was going to be compromised and their computers would be at risk. And some of them have been very, very successful to the tune of $60, $70 million that are hitting our senior citizens every day. And it's really upsetting. And that's something we're working here at UW-Whitewater is to understand what can we do, not just to train our businesses, but to train our aging populations. We have a great gerontology department here, and I'm working very closely with them to begin building training that we can start sending out to our aging populations as well.
Stacy, thank you for that. Kathy now in Milwaukee. Kathy, hi. You got a new laptop.
Yes. And so I was going through all the setup stuff, and I was pretty certain that at the time I did not order any, you know, Defender products. And 2 days ago, I got an email saying that thank you for my order of Windows Defender for $399. And I had to call them back within 3 days if I wanted to cancel the order. And I called back yesterday, and they said, well, you have to be on the computer to cancel. And honestly, I was going to call them, you know, until I heard this show today. Mm. And thank you for the show. I mean, you know, it can't be legitimate. And I've gotten three emails now, so I'm not going to call them.
Kathy, thank you. Brian, what did Kathy encounter?
So what she got with that call to action is they are telling you that something has to happen immediately and that they want you to get on your computer so you can actually cancel this, you know, and Windows is not going to do that to you. And Microsoft is not going to do that to you. And it's really what they're hoping is that you will open up a window where then they will remotely access your computer to supposedly help you through this process. And what they'll be doing is just getting inside your system and taking everything they can before it's too late. Mm. And so that was wonderful. That's great to hear.
Kathy, thank you. Tracy now in Iron County. Tracy, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm talking about training banks and the businesses. Is there a third-party entity? Can I ask my bank for an arm's-length report of an audit that says they're doing the latest, greatest standards of the industry to stop this? How do I know that this bank is not going to get hacked or ransomware and all the files are gone, all my money's gone? Can I ask my bank for a third-party report from someone who does what you do?
Yeah,
is that something will start to take over?
Tracy, thank you. Is this possible, Brian?
You know, you can definitely talk to your bank and try to figure out what they're specifically working on when it comes to cybersecurity. I don't know if they're going to be willing to just hand over that type of information about potential tabletop exercises or even cybersecurity range exercises. You know, here in Whitewater, Wisconsin, there's a great bank that we work with very closely, and these folks are really on top of their cybersecurity and understanding what it takes to be secure. And I hope that most banks across the state are thinking that way. A lot of banks are also spending a lot of money on cybersecurity insurance. So they're making sure that if a breach would occur, that they are actually insured to handle that breach. So I don't know. I'd honestly be very curious, Tracy, to see if a bank would be willing to give up that information. But I'm pretty confident that most of our banks, even our small town banks, are thinking a lot about it right now because it is such a major issue within the financial sector.
Yeah, and certainly that issue of transparency and just that not knowing, because along Tracy's lines, you know, sometimes I suddenly hear from my credit card saying that, you know, you need to, we're sending you a new credit card immediately. And I always wonder, like, I wonder if they just had a breach and they're not telling me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, again, it's all about that call to action and trying to figure out, you know, is this legitimate? We are really working in a new world right now when it comes to understanding information as it comes out and comes our direction.
So a handful of countries are teaming up in a new cybersecurity alliance, four nations, Australia, India, Japan, the U.S. What will this collective do?
That collective is really focused on what's happening within the attacks that are coming from our nation state adversaries. You know, China is very busy right now building a cyber, a really cyber army is the best way to describe what China's working on. North Korea is doing the same. You know, Russia has always been a big player in cyber attacks. And I'm glad that these governments have joined together and are really beginning to understand what's happening. And I think that's a great thing. We should be doing that to better understand that. But at the same time, is it really going to make much difference for what's happening to us as business owners, as employees, as private citizens with bank accounts? Not that much. This is really on us. You know, we can't sit around and wait for the government to fix cybercrime. They're not going to do it. I mean, it's impossible. The only real fix to this is cyber hygiene, for us to start thinking more securely whenever we do anything online.
Yeah, that trickle-down effect. So what is something that we can do today to improve our own cybersecurity as individuals here in the last final seconds?
Just start thinking about your behavior online. Do you have the same password for multiple accounts? How often do you change your passwords? Password encryption, we have just not done a good enough job. There are password crackers that can be downloaded really quickly and easily, and folks can get into accounts with simple tactics. And so are we doing enough? Are we sharing information that we ought not to share online? And then are we thinking every time that we get an email about the legitimacy of it? We've got to get to that trust but verify and really kind of that zero trust concept of making sure that anytime something comes in, especially if it has a call to action, that is this the call to action that I need to answer right now? Or do I need to do just a little bit more research? And it's going to take more time out of our day to do that research, but it's going to keep us safer.
Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having us.
Brian Dennis is director of the Cybersecurity Center for Business at UW-Whitewater. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.